Again, this is State versus Laughlin. Good morning.
May it please the court, my name is Kyle Manley, counsel for appellant Ryan M. Laughlin. Although there are multiple assignments of error in this case, we feel that this case is ultimately about whether the trial court violated the neutral position of the court by informing the state that the evidence regarding venue was insufficient, and then providing them with a method of fixing that insufficiency. As the court knows, this case involves a criminal conviction for driving under a revocation, in which, after the state had presented all of its evidence and rested, there was a question whether venue had been properly shown. There was a back and forth between state and the judge about the sufficiency of the evidence, and the judge listened to the record of what had been testified and ultimately determined that the evidence was insufficient to prove venue beyond a reasonable doubt. At that point, a recess was called, and the trial judge went back to chambers and researched it. Then it came back and let counsel know that it could not take judicial notice of the fact of venue, but could reopen the record and ask if that is what the state would like to do. It's our position that at that point, the court went beyond its role as a neutral fact finder and gave state kind of a way of proving its evidence.
Did you believe at that point that there had not been sufficient evidence presented on the issue of venue?
I did not believe it was. Appellee argued in its brief that there had been sufficient evidence and that anything that happened after that was harmless error. But the judge even stated on the record that he felt that there had not been sufficient evidence to prove venue, and we don't feel like it was.
What effect does it have that the district court, in its review, found that there was sufficient evidence even without the additional testimony?
Well, I believe that the district court erred in its interpretation of kind of the events that happened. I don't feel like it fully looked into the record and noticed that the trial court judge had in fact stated that he did not think that venue had been proven beyond a reasonable doubt. So I don't think that any inferences that could have been made regarding venue proper.
Did the fact that it appears, as I recall, that the record in the suppression hearing, the evidence there was sufficient to establish that the address that was given was in Gage County. Is that of any benefit then when the case goes to trial, or is it a brand new day and we start over?
It's our position that it's a brand new day, where all the testimony given at the trial is what should be used to determine the sufficiency of the evidence. I believe Appley argued in their brief that the trial court could look back at the testimony in the suppression hearing, but even if the court could, it didn't. It simply looked at the testimony that was given that day and decided that venue hadn't been proven beyond a reasonable doubt. So I don't think the suppression hearing really holds any play into the trial itself.
Counsel, can we go back to the district judge? I'm just looking at his order, and he said, the writing of a parking ticket, however, raises a reasonable inference that the events in question took place in the city of Beatrice, because an officer writing a parking ticket is a routine matter for an officer on duty during a regular shift. He's talking as opposed to some of these other cases where there's been a pursuit or the officer's in his car. It does seem like this pretty mundane act of writing a ticket, it doesn't seem like a great leap to assume that the officer is within his jurisdiction when he's writing a parking ticket. I know you don't agree with that, but how do you rebut that?
Well, I think it could be a reasonable inference. And any other trial judge could have found that the evidence was sufficient.
Right.
But this particular trial judge felt like, despite the fact that he was there writing a citation, that was still not enough, in his opinion, to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. So any reasonable inferences that could be made, he likely thought through them and decided that it still wasn't enough.
So you're agreeing that that could be sufficient evidence to prove venue?
I believe it could be, but...
But it wasn't here because the trial judge didn't think it was. Is that what you're saying? That it's not sufficient to prove venue because the trial judge said he didn't think it was enough.
Yes.
That's your position,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's our position.
Even though it may well have been enough.
I think it comes down to whether the fact finder, which was the judge in this case, feels like that's enough to prove. And that judge did not, when any other fact finder might have found that.
Okay.
And is that a question of fact?
I think it is a question of fact. A venue needs to be proven just like any other element, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt. So whether this particular crime happened in this venue and that this court is the one that should be hearing that case, it's all a question of fact.
So whether the evidence is sufficient to find that the police officer was within his jurisdiction is a question of fact.
And then when the trial judge came back and explained how to fix the insufficiency, we feel like this went, like I explained, beyond the scope of what the judge should have done in that situation.
Had he just allowed the state to reopen the evidence and present additional testimony, would you have had a problem with that as well?
No. I think if it had been the state's idea, if the state had requested that the case be, the factual record be reopened so that they could get additional testimony, I don't think we would be here today. I think it's solely because the judge prompted them by explaining that this is what you could do to fix this problem. Is that what you would like to do? And I think it should have been on the state to realize how it could fix the problem.
The case law is pretty clear, I think, that if the state raises the issue, it can reopen.
Exactly.
And I think there's even case law that says if the defense has pointed out the deficiency, the state can still reopen its case.
Right. So like in closing argument, the defense brings up the venue issue. It kind of raises the question.
Right. But you get into this case law where the judge says, do you want to reopen your case? That's where the line is crossed.
And I believe that's exactly what happened in this case. Okay. So the judge... If the judge felt like the state was trying to get the judge to find venue through judicial notice, the judge had gone back and researched the case law and come back to say, no, I can't take judicial notice of it, should have left it at that. Then let the state take the next step and saying, well, then can I get some additional testimony from the office?
Going back to the initial testimony, and that's a question of fact. So the standard of review is what? I think it would be clearly erroneous.
Oh, right.
What if we found that to be clearly erroneous?
Well, I don't think it is clearly erroneous.
What if we do?
Well, then, I guess it was harmless. Kind of pose the question.
Well, do you think that there's a problem that's raised because the judge clearly relied on the testimony that was given after the judge instigated the reopening of the evidence? Does that help at all?
I believe without that additional testimony, they wouldn't have been able to prove their case in chief.
And that's the testimony that the trial judge relied on.
Yes, but he relied on the testimony that happened after.
Right, right, okay.
Gave them the option to recall their witness. And about 30 seconds left, so I reserved that time.
Okay, very well. Thank you, Mr. Love. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May I please support George Love on behalf of the Appalachian State of Nebraska.
I briefed the issue. I don't really have a whole lot to add other than what I've said in brief. I briefed it basically with the first two assignments of error is one, the third and fourth is one, and then finally the fifth error. The issue seems to be on the venue, not on the suppression or the approach of the officer with respect to the search and seizure issue. I believe this case is pretty much on all fours with this court's case in the Heitze decision in 2006. The approach is a first-tier approach, and even if one does not consider it a first-tier approach, there was certainly a reasonable suspicion for a Terry stop. If there are any questions on that issue, I'll move on to the venue issue. Basically summarizing here, you have the trial court inquiring if venue was shown. Reviewing the record and the law, and then asking the state if they want to reopen. The state argues there's sufficient evidence to show venue, which the district court on appeal, sitting as an appellate court, found there was sufficient evidence, notwithstanding for allowing...
That initial testimony was enough.
Correct. Sitting as an appellate court, the district court certainly could consider the evidence from the motion to suppress, in which direct evidence of venue.
Is there a case law that you, where that's been done, where...
Well, State v. Ball.
Where an element has been proven by use of the evidence from a motion to suppress?
Well, I think, yeah, on, if you categorize, I can't think of one off the top of my head, Your Honor, but the answer to that is yes, and I would suspect it's State v. Ball. And the reason is what you're really looking at is a sufficiency argument. Is the evidence sufficient? Well, if an appellate court can sit and look at both the motion to suppress evidence and the evidence at trial, then you have both direct evidence of venue and you have circumstantial evidence of venue sitting as a district court.
But you only get the circumstantial evidence if you look at, if the court has the authority to look at the suppression hearing. And that, I think that's the
Ball
question.
Says it does. An appellate court does.
In the context of a motion to suppress.
No. Maybe I'm not being clear here. I think I need to back up. What I'm saying is the district court sat as an appellate court. An appellate court, pursuant to the decision in State v. Ball, can look at all of the evidence, i.e., the evidence on the motion to suppress and the evidence at trial, in order to reach its decision. This is a sufficiency of the evidence argument. In other words, the evidence is insufficient on venue, ergo the state didn't prove its case. But if an appellate court can look at the motion to suppress as well as the trial evidence, then the motion to suppress, there's direct evidence of venue because the officer was asked if the events occurred in Gage County, Nebraska. Found it in the affirmative. That's in the motion to suppress. At the trial, you certainly have the circumstantial evidence. Police officer in uniform, writing a ticket in a marked cruiser at a particular address within the city of Beatrice. That's enough circumstantial evidence to support the idea that he was doing his duty in the city of Beatrice, which by inference is Gage County, Nebraska. The circumstantial evidence, as the district court found, is sufficient to infer venue, notwithstanding that it's already proven on the motion to suppress. So the point being is this is a sufficiency argument, and the evidence is that venue was proven both circumstantially and by direct evidence.
Circumstantially by the testimony.
Circumstantially in the
trial.
Correct.
And then you're saying directly or overtly at the motion to suppress.
Correct.
So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And just a quick thought. Don't we have a problem that we know for a fact that the trial judge relied on what is arguably inadmissible evidence.
No.
Let's just say we conclude that that was wrong for the judge.
Then your conclusion's wrong, Your Honor.
Well.
I'm sorry.
Well, but bear with me. If we say that, then we know the judge relied on inadmissible evidence.
The trial. We're talking about the trial.
Trial judge,
okay,
correct. Right. And I'm thinking of State versus Chambers, where there's admissible evidence and inadmissible evidence, if we know that the finder of fact relied on the inadmissible evidence, we reverse. But just bear with me. Just play along with me. Isn't that the way this would unfold?
Well, if you set the premise, then the conclusion is obvious.
Well, if the premise is that evidence was inadmissible, you mean?
No, that's your premise. I'm saying it is inadmissible. Or it is admissible because there's no abuse of discretion in reopening this case. If you set the premise as we are going to find that this was an abuse of discretion in allowing the reopening of the case, then the conclusion follows.
Which is?
But I respectfully submit it is not an abuse of discretion.
The conclusion would be then we would reverse because the judge relied on inadmissible evidence. Again, based on that premise.
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct. But I would respectfully submit that the premise is incorrect because it is not an abuse of discretion to reopen the case. Because the evidence supported it there in the first place. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Following Judge Irwin's premise, would we not then consider if the evidence without the additional evidence, the evidence that was admitted at trial, would we then determine whether that was sufficient or insufficient?
Yes. The answer is yes. In other words, that's how you're getting the harmless error that I argued in brief. You have two avenues here of venue. One is the motion to suppress in combination with the trial. Okay. First, at the trial level, was there sufficient circumstantial evidence on appellate review, given that's the standard, sufficiency, most favorable to the state? Was there sufficient evidence at the trial level, even if you isolate or exclude the motion to suppress, to prove up on venue? And as the district court found, sitting as an appellate court, the evidence was sufficient, notwithstanding the court reopening the case. And the appellate court also found it was not an abuse of discretion for the trial court to reopen the case. So based on the standard of review that we're talking here, which is an abuse of discretion with respect to reopening the case, there couldn't be an abuse of discretion because the evidence was already there.
And you agree that the question of whether the evidence is sufficient to show venue is a question of fact?
Correct. That is.
Which would be clearly erroneous standard review.
And again, as the appellate court found, even if you would conclude that it was error to reopen the case, the premise Judge Irwin, that it was error to reopen the case for some reason, that the evidence was insufficient to notwithstanding the district court's finding it was, if you would find that, you have harmless error, simply because of the, on appellate review, you have the ability to take in the evidence at the motion to suppress, as well as the trial evidence, and then determine, is the evidence viewed most favorably to the state sufficient to prove venue? And the answer is yes.
But then I go back to State versus Chambers. We know what the judge relied on, what evidence. And in State versus Chambers, there was admissible evidence, but the Supreme Court said where the fact finder relies on inadmissible evidence, even though there's admissible evidence, reversal.
I think State v. McCulloch has changed that operation. That is you're allowed to consider all the evidence, whether admissible or inadmissible. State v. McCulloch changed that dynamic. If there are no further questions, then I would ask that you affirm, excuse me, the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Love.
Thank you.
How much time does appellant's counsel have left?
Um, I just want to address the question of whether the district court should have found that there was sufficient evidence by looking at suppression hearing. In any suppression hearing, you're going to have testimony that likely parallels the actual testimony that's going to happen in the trial court. But even if there had been testimony at a suppression hearing that they could prove all the elements of the crime, if any of those things are lacking in the trial judge is going to find...
Finish your thought. Go ahead and finish your thought.
And so I think that it is not something that the district court should use in deciding whether or not there had been evidence. It should just look at the testimony that's been given and the decision by the trial court prior to the admission of the happened after that.
Thank you, and thank you both, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You're excused. Next matter this morning is Qualsett versus Abrahams. Mr. Krieger, good morning. And again, Qualsett versus Abrahams.
May it please the court, my name is Bob Krieger. I represent Mr. Qualsett with all his